Thanks for listening to the Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
I had given the Browns some credit when we broke down the AFC North a couple of days ago on this show. I want that back. I know it's a preseason game, but I want that back. Cleveland is going to be in fourth in this division. I have no idea what I was thinking, but I will tell you this, Jeff. Boy, is Hard Knocks going to be great on Tuesday night.
The level of incompetence in the Browns organization, it's really just Hugh Jackson. The level of incompetence with Hugh Jackson is mind-blowing to me. He looks completely lost in the sideline at all times. Hard Knocks has shown shown him in a terrible light, whether it's the big boy chair comment, whether it's Tyrod Taylor giving him a suggestion on how to handle the meeting room when players are not hustling during practice. I mean, you know, Hugh should have known what to do there without having to get a suggestion from Tyrod. Maybe Hugh did know, but he didn't act like he knew. He didn't say to Tyrod, yeah, man, I'm planning on doing that or something like that. And then last night was a complete show of incompetence in how to handle injury situations and their best players. Let's just start with Myles Garrett, first of all, who was not hurt. Myles Garrett was fabulous last night. He had three sacks, maybe, and a safety, including one of those. After his first or second sack, that's it for Myles Garrett. He doesn't have to play the rest of the half.
You realize, Hugh, you didn't have him last year for much of it at all because of an injury, and you've got him out there for no apparent reason.
Think about this. They rested him for most of camp to get him ready for the games. And now you're playing him in a meaningless game where guys are getting hurt left and right. Tyrod Taylor got hurt. Your right tackle got hurt, who came back in. Your first pick, your second first round pick, your fourth pick overall, Denzel Ward, gets hurt. You have Myles Garrett out there, clearly the best player on the field last night, is out there wreaking havoc, and you still have him playing the whole first half. Just it's unbelievably incompetent. Then the Tyrod Taylor situation. Look, I've been very critical of the Browns, obviously, for a while now. A little bit of that stems with what happened with my brother, but that staff is gone. Like, I don't hold ill will to the Browns for that now. I mean, that staff is gone. To not play Baker Mayfield with the ones is malpractice. And you saw last night, by the way, did you notice last night playing with the ones a little different for Baker Mayfield, a little faster?
A little more dirt
and people around his legs, right? A little more of a dirty pocket. Guys moving a little faster. This is why you're playing with the ones, so he can get this experience in, because you don't know when he has to play with the ones, whether it's because of a Tyrod Taylor injury, whether it's because the Browns just don't play well the first 3 weeks of the year, and Baker Mayfield has to come in. You have to play him with the ones. Josh Rosen's got to rep to the ones. Josh Rosen probably will not start in week one. Sam Darnold is going to start in week one. He's going to rep to the ones. Josh Allen will probably start in week one. He's going to rep to the ones. Even Lamar Jackson. Now, this was taking it back to the first preseason game, the Hall of Fame game. He's gone reps with the ones. Everyone except Baker Mayfield till the injury last night. And then the injury last night, Jason. So the Browns run the ball two or three times in a row for multiple yards. You know, I think it was like 40 yards, right? They had two or three long runs in a row, get down to the 1 yard line. What do? They throw the ball four freaking times in a row. The same stuff, fades and pick routes. Everyone knows what you're doing, fades and pick routes. Everyone runs fades and pick routes. And then on fourth down, because they decided to throw the ball again, Tyrod Taylor rolls out to his left, throws the ball back across his body. As he's falling down, he hurts his wrist or hand. X-rays are negative. I don't know what happens. And he goes back inside. They bring Baker Mayfield in. Comes back out, and they put him back in the football game. He's supposed to, you have gone out of your way to be nice to Tyrod Taylor and to protect his feelings and protect whatever you want to protect with him by having Baker Mayfield not take reps with the ones. That's why you're doing it. You're doing it to protect Tyrod Taylor. You've gone out of your way to say, as many times as you can, scream from the mountaintops that Baker Mayfield was not going to take reps to the ones. Tyrod Taylor is our guy. Every time you get a chance to say that. You scream that at. Tyrod Taylor is our guy. Yeah, you have an opportunity now to protect your guy, and you put him back in the freaking game. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. He couldn't hand the ball off with his left hand. He could not hold the ball solely with his left hand. Whenever he handed the ball off with his left hand, he'd do it with two hands. His wrist was that messed up that he couldn't hold a football. And yet you have him out there playing when the offensive line last night for both teams was really bad. But so he's getting hit out there. He's playing in a meaningless preseason game. He's your supposed starter. And he just avoided a horrific wrist injury, which, by the way, he could still, they could go in there tonight, or today, I should say, and do MRI and be like, yo, he's out. He tore 2-3 ligaments in his wrist. He's out. Like, it could be done, and you still have him out there with a number one quarterback, again, who needs the reps with the ones. It's the stupidest thing. It's so incompetent. The Browns are so incompetent.
But John Dorsey's a smart guy. You know that. We talked about what happened in Kansas City. Like, how is he think? Like, what do you think he's thinking watching all this go on with his head coach?
I think that John Dorsey's letting Hugh Jackson hang himself. Like, letting him make decisions that are
make it
poor,
so crystal clear, obvious he shouldn't have that job.
That he's out of a job. I mean, look, I think what's interesting about that is, you know, if Hugh's out of a job quickly, does Todd Haley take over, which I think will be really interesting. And, you know, there's Barrett Salee was on, who we know Barrett, he was on my radio show last night. He mentioned, you know, that Urban Meyer could be the Browns head coach in a year.
Yeah, Clay said that as well a couple of times.
And you have Jimmy Haslam, who is a supporter of Tennessee and of Ohio State. I didn't know he was a big booster of Ohio State either, but it makes sense. He's, you know, owner of the Browns. That's a soft landing spot for Urban Meyer to come to the NFL and work for the Browns. And I just, when you looked at Hugh last night, he looked like he just didn't look like he knew what he was. He just looked like, especially when Tyrod got hurt, he looked like, and look, I get it, right? Your starting quarterback gets hurt in a preseason game. But the rest of the night, he looked like he wasn't there.
Yeah.
Like, he had no... The problem I have with the Browns is they don't have a plan of attack, most, it feels like, for anything. Like, there's no concrete plan.
Yeah, I mean, last night's the first time I've watched Hugh Jackson and thought, okay, that guy's not a head football coach. Like, I've always watched him and thought he had it.
1-31
he understood. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not suggesting that. I mean, the organization has been horrendous for a long time. I mean, we could run through the coaches and the quarterbacks again, but we only have a 3-hour radio show here. But when you start to look at Hugh Jackson overall, he was competent when he was in Oakland. I mean, it wasn't a complete disaster. What I saw last night was something that I don't even think I'll see on the sidelines of a high school game tonight. Like, he was making multiple decisions that were gambling with the franchise's regular season future for the sake of a meaningless preseason game. Like, there's no way to spin it. And any average football fan could see that these were mistakes being made.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see how this plays out on HBO. Let's go to L.A., actually, a little bit earlier than we have at times. This week. And Danny, I don't know how much of this football game you watched. I didn't watch all of it. I'm not going to stand here and say behind this microphone that I watched 4 quarters of Browns-Eagles preseason last night on Fox. But I saw enough to know that that was really bad football. And then when you look at the decisions that Hugh Jackson made, I don't know how you can square any of this. Like, it's some of the most irrational nonsense I've ever seen, man.
So I'm kind of happy this morning because last night I actually wound up going to dinner with a girl who I was supposed to go out with tonight, but the date got pushed forward because Ben Maller is having this big baseball night at the San Manuel Stadium in beautiful San Bernardino, California. So
you sound so excited.
no, it'll be a lot of fun because not just Southern California listeners, but listeners all over the country, Fox Sports Radio listeners, gather to meet some of the personalities from our network.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
They come to meet Ben Maller?
Oh, for sure.
Is this like the Juggalos?
Like, do people fly, like from flying distance or just kind of like in the Inland Empire?
listeners from Omaha that are coming out to meet Ben Maller in California?
Puerto Rico?
Well, 2 years ago, we had one of these nights, and there were listeners from Denver, from all over, from different states. They came in that night just to meet the crew, which was really cool. So these things only happen every 2 years. So on Twitter, some listeners were asking, you know, for me to come on out. So I'm going to do that. So I told this girl, I'm like, look, here's the thing. You're going to come to a Fox Sports Radio event with $1.50 hot dogs and some warm beer at a minor league baseball game on Friday. So that means let's have dinner on Thursday. So I'm at dinner, but my notifications were going off. I'm checking. I'm seeing everybody smack talk Hugh Jackson on Twitter. And I'm like, dang it, what am I missing? So half of me was focused on her and the dinner, and the other half of me was on my phone. But I was doing that trick where I had the phone down on the seat, you know, to my right, down on the booth seat. So I'm looking at the notifications. I'm like, what is going on? As soon as I get home, I turn on the highlights and I'm shaking my head. I'm like, wow. Flashbacks of Hugh in Oakland. I'll tell you a couple good things about him. He's a great play caller. You know, the Raiders and the Cincinnati Bengals miss his play calling. That's about the only thing. And the other thing I liked when he was in Oakland is because I was doing radio in the Bay at the time. I loved his weekly radio appearances in the Bay Area. He was a personable guy. He seemed very forthright, and he didn't, let's put it this way, he wasn't Lane Kiffin. When Lane Kiffin was the Raiders coach, I was a season ticket holder at the time, and I hated when Lane would get on the radio. He wouldn't tell the fans anything. He kept everything very close to his vest, and the things he was keeping close were not good things because he was a horrible game manager for whatever reason back then. So when Hugh Jackson was on the radio, I loved how open he was with everything that was going on with the team. Now, he unfortunately started acting as the general manager, and you remember what happened where he gambled with those picks to get Carson Palmer, and there was some infighting because he was kind of trying to take over for Al Davis after Al passed, so he didn't get to come back the next season as the Raiders coach. So I kind of root for him. I liked what he did in Cincinnati. I think he's, like I said, he's a great play caller, but he's an offensive coordinator. This whole feel of Hard Knocks to me has been that he's in over his head.
Yes.
Agreed. I mean, he comes across like a guy that you would really like, incredibly likable guy, but not the guy that you want to see leading as the CEO of your football franchise. Like, he just does not look to have the skill set that he needs, which is, again, why I point back to, did Todd Haley, Greg Williams, do you, Danny, I didn't ask you this question. I asked Jeff this question. I asked Dustin Fox this question. If you're Todd Haley, if you're Greg Williams, and you're watching that act last night, what's running through your head?
Can we fast forward to the next head coach of this team? Because I just don't see Hugh Jackson staying with the way he's handled Baker Mayfield. We've talked about it on this show that we think he's doing what he's been doing with Baker because he's trying to drag out his position.
He wants to win enough.
Yeah.
It's not like they're going to win the Super Bowl with Tyrod Taylor, but he wants to win 6 games or something like that so that he can keep his job because he thinks Tyrod Taylor can win in the short term, whereas Baker Mayfield's going to go through growing pains. So
he is
looking to try and extend a tenure, not do anything great for the franchise long term.
Yeah, and we know if you have that wild card in your pocket that, well, we have this number one draft pick, he's not ready to go yet, but fan base, look out. When he's ready, I'm going to put him in, and that's when things are going to really get good. But after these last few seasons, how can you not play your number one pick? You have to. And like Jeff said, the game is so fast when it's the first units of both teams playing. That's the experience you need on the field. So Baker should have already been practicing this whole time with the Browns' first unit, and he should have been in these preseason games against the best players the other team had to offer.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff, you saw it last night, and we already mentioned it, watching Baker Mayfield running for his life last night, like in a way where he looked a lot more frantic, a lot more chaotic than we had seen at any point during the preseason when he was under control, because he was under control against reserves and backups.
Yeah.
And last night he's out there against starters, and he finally got a taste of it. Remember on Hard Knocks, they even said, you know, Hugh Jackson came over to him on Tuesday night on the episode on week 3 and said, you know, how's everything feeling? How you doing? He's like, it's all starting to slow down for me. Well, last night it sped the hell up on Baker Mayfield because he was actually out there against the people he would be playing against when these games matter.
Right, and against a good defensive line who, you know, and this is the Browns starting offensive line last night. The right guard situation, there'll be a different right guard. But this is the Browns starting offensive line, and they're playing a legit defensive line in the Eagles who are too deep everywhere. You have a potential Hall of Famer in Haloti Ngata. I think he'll get some votes eventually down the line. He's a backup. He's a backup. That's how good they are on the defensive line. Haloti last night had a nice sack, and you know Derek Barnett is rounding into his own from Tennessee. I thought he was a great draft pick. For the Eagles.
Yeah, I love it. We love that pick. You hear Barnett was a tremendous pick.
Yeah, Barnett was the most polished pass rusher in last year's draft, and I thought the Eagles got a steal. Man, he was in a great situation. He gets to go and learn from, if you don't give a proper space between what I'm about to say, it could sound really bad. He can learn from Long Cox and Long and Cox. I said that last night on Twitter, and people enjoyed that. He can learn from Chris Long and Fletcher Cox.
Right.
And even Brandon Graham as well, who had the sack in the Super Bowl to seal that game for the Eagles. And just no pressure on him at all. And this year he's getting more run. He's playing well, and I think he's going to be a huge addition. But you have a professional defensive line. I mean, there were blitzes last night. They happen quicker than they do with the twos and threes. The Eagles played their starters in the entire first half. By the way, Jason, we've talked a lot of negative about this game, and it rightfully deserves to be talked about that way. How about this, though? No helmet penalty last night. No helmet penalty.
That's a good point.
You want to know why? It's exactly what's happening, just like I said it would. They had the conference call yesterday.
Yeah,
they talked about this
not to change.
Two days ago. Yeah, come on. They talked about this. They're not stupid. They're not going to change the rule, but they're going to tell them to not enforce it quite the same. Come out, standalone national TV game last night on Fox with Baker Mayfield playing and defending champs. You know people are going to tune in. People craving football. There's no national baseball last night. Little League World Series. I don't know if that was on. I mean, people are going to watch this game last night. And the starters were playing. So we've seen a lot of these calls, in my opinion, and I'm, I thought about this last night when I tweeted out about there was no helmet rule in the first half. We've seen a lot of these calls against backup players. I can't recall seeing many of these helmet calls against the starters, and that's because the starters know how to tackle better. They know how to aim and adjust because they've had to deal with changing rules throughout the years, and they know how to change. And so we saw the starters last night. We saw a national TV game after a conference call discussing the helmet rule. There wasn't even one last night. There was one I thought to myself in the first half, like, wow, this could have been called. It might have been called in previous weeks. Otherwise, it was a clean game. It was a defensive game. There were hard hits. Football's still alive, man. Everyone freaking out about it. Still here. It's still going to go strong. So I was glad to see that they pulled back on that last night.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Clay Travis is back on Monday. I'm Jason Martin in with Jeff Schwartz. We welcome in Fox Sports college football analyst, also NFL draft analyst, the great Joel Klatt. Joel, how are you?
Good. How are you guys this morning?
We are doing well. We've got to talk about unfortunate situations. It's very sad. Football is starting tomorrow. There are four college games, and then, of course, we've got week one, and this is such a great time of year for sports fans. Yet, our conversation has been dominated by the University of Maryland and certainly Ohio State University and the situation surrounding Urban Meyer. How sad is it that we can't really even talk about what's happening on the field because of such awful things happening off it?
Well, it's certainly concerning. I yesterday was candidly I was just sad for the sport. We just can't get out of our own way at times. I can't wait for these kids to get back on the field, these young men get back on the field, so we can start focusing on what college football should be about, which is the young men, their growth, their development, both as athletes and as men. Too many times we've got the adults in the room, the administrators, the coaches, the commissioners and the league offices, the NCAA, you could put under this umbrella as well. The people that are making all of the money and the billions and billions of dollars that are coming into college athletics, and they're the ones that are, on a grand scale, I would say, largely failing the sport. Their greed and their lack of oversight and consistency has been, I think, on full display, in particular over the last couple of weeks, when you've got kids selling their own sneakers, getting 4-game suspensions, and then, you know, this week we get Urban Meyer getting 3-game suspension. It just doesn't seem right. Now, you can make an argument that Urban should have either been fired or not fired, and that a suspension and some gray area in between is totally irrelevant. There are arguments to be made, and I've read the entire report, and you can go either way. Trust me. I mean, you can go either way, in particular if you're a lawyer worth your salt. But to answer your question, it's incredibly frustrating to see the sport that I love dragged through the mud. And quite frankly, they bring that upon themselves to a large extent. And regardless of what you think about the results of what happened at Ohio State or what will happen at Maryland and so on and so forth, I think that we are at a point, and there's the monetary means and the scale in our sport is large enough where we are in desperate need of an overarching governing body. And people say, well, isn't that what the NCAA is? Absolutely not. The NCAA is not an overarching governing body because they do not require leagues and schools to behave similarly. Remember now, these schools govern themselves, and then they essentially outsource the NCAA to do things like hold themselves, you know, accountable when it comes to compliance issues. So the NCAA's power and reach is actually vastly more limited than people have any idea about. We need a college football commissioner. We need a commissioner's office. And that would solve a lot of different issues, from rules and the differences in rules to scheduling to things like oversight when it comes to the administration of off-the-field penalties.
Has the Urban Meyer situation and some of these other situations also proven that college football coaches might have a little bit too much power on many of these campuses in this country?
Well, no, not necessarily, because, let me go back. Do they have too much power on some of these campuses? Absolutely. Is it isolated? Absolutely. I talked with several coaches yesterday, and I'm going to use their words, not mine. They said, if that was me, I would have been fired because I'm not whatever it is, 76-8 at my school. And I think that's an interesting part. A lot of them said, if I had deleted text messages, I would be fired. And so the power comes with the success. Very similar, you know, you can always draw an analogy to real life. And you go back to our financial crisis of the late 2010s, and there were banks that were, quote unquote, too big to fail, you know, and that was a term that we all, you know, essentially was given to us about why things were happening within our economy and what the government was doing. And I think that you can attribute that type of a term to college football. I think that there are coaches out there that are too successful to fail. And none of this suggests that I think he should have been fired. You know, candidly, those are tough decisions. And like I said, there can be an argument made either way, no suspension or all the way to firing. But I do think that there are coaches out there that, because of their record, are given exponentially more rope than others.
Let's talk about some players on the field. You came out with your quarterback rankings. It was either yesterday or the day before that. You rightfully had Oregon Ducks Justin Herbert number one, which bothered Clay, which was fantastic. It was exactly what needed to be done. What about him gets you excited? I'm a former Duck, obviously, and I think he could have a big season.
Well, not only the season that I think he could potentially have, but his impact on the field last year when he was on the field versus when he was off the field due to that collarbone injury, and the fact that his projection, I think, puts him in squarely in the top five in the NFL draft. I think Justin Herbert's going to be the first quarterback taken. Most NFL evaluators that I talk to believe the same as what I just stated. And I think that's a team that is right now flying a little bit under the radar that is going to be very good. Their schedule is a little bit more favorable than what you look at with Stanford and in particular with Washington.
Yeah.
This is a team that retains Jim Leavitt, their defensive coordinator, which improved them by 15 points per game and 150 yards, or 12 points per game and 150 yards per game. He's one of the best in all of college football. And when Herbert was on the field, they averaged 52 points a game versus 15 points per game when he wasn't on the field. So everything to me suggests that this kid could have a very big season. He disseminates information very quickly. He's a smooth mover for how big he is. He's got a quick release. It's an incredibly powerful arm, and yet he also throws with great touch. This guy's the real deal. I think the fact that he plays in a conference and in a region of the country that just does not get the attention that it should, people are not talking about him. But rest assured, Justin Herbert is the best quarterback in college football, and I can't wait to watch him play.
Well, one game that can definitely bring some positive attention to the Pac-12 was Week 1. Washington goes to the quote-unquote neutral site, Atlanta, and plays Auburn. I think it's going to be a tough task for Washington to win that game, but if any Pac-12 team, I think, recently is able to beat an SEC team, it might be Washington. How do you think that game goes for the conference?
Well, I think for the conference, they better hope that Washington wins, and I know that's an obvious, but the bottom line for me is I think that it goes further than Washington and Washington's chances to go to the playoff. If Washington loses that game after the 1-7 showing that the Pac-12 just gave us in the bowl season, I think there's a really good chance that the collateral damage goes as far as individual awards. And I think that we would see Bryce Love not get the attention that he deserves and Khalil Tate not get the attention he deserves. And if Oregon has a great year and Justin Herbert wouldn't get the attention that he deserves. And then all of a sudden, you start looking at the barrier to entry that the Pac-12 would be trying to get over in order to get into the playoffs. And in some respects, it would be insurmountable. Now, in some points of view, they do that to themselves with the schedule that they play. And, and certainly, I can agree with that. But that game cannot be overstated in its importance, not only for Washington, but for the conference as a whole. Let me put it to you this way. I think there's a really good shot that if Washington were to lose that game and then run the table, that Washington would still not get in to the college football playoff. Well, think about it, because I don't think Auburn's going to be in the top two in their conference. Quite frankly, they're not anywhere close to Alabama, and right now I don't think that they're close to Georgia. But let's say Alabama and Georgia both put themselves in a position to be in, regardless of if they win their conference or not, in that championship game. Now, all of a sudden, how do you put Washington in?
You know, that's a tough question.
So for me, Washington has to win that game, and then they could even lose, let's say, the back-to-back road game at Oregon, and it wouldn't hurt them nearly as badly as a loss in narrative perspective to Auburn in Week 1.
Joel, always good to catch up with you. I'm sure Clay will be talking to you many times throughout the season. We appreciate you joining us here on this Friday.
Yeah, so at some point we'll get Clay to actually be like realistic about football.
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
The winners of these divisions. So let's go. We did the AFC East before we went to our interview segment there. So let's talk about the NFC East and who is going to win there. Despite the fact that it was 5-0 last week, the Philadelphia Eagles are the defending Super Bowl champions. I'm torn. I don't know. Dallas's injuries, and there's some things there that I don't really like. I believe in Saquon Barkley. I'm going to stick with Philadelphia. I believe in Doug Peterson. I believe in that offense. I think Carson Wentz, I love Carson Wentz to death. As long as he's healthy, if we're presuming he's healthy, I'll take the Eagles. Jeff?
The Eagles would be my pick. Would not surprise me if the Giants won that division. There has not been a repeat winner in the NFC East since 2004.
That's quite a stat. Danny?
Yeah, it's going to be worst to second for the Giants, and wouldn't surprise me either. Power of Saquon taking the pressure off of Eli.
Roberto?
I'm going with the Eagles.
All right. I don't know if Eddie has already passed away for the day.
He said happy Friday.
Okay, fantastic.
Did you say all he right. passed away for the day?
I meant to say he passed out of the building. It's been a long week. It's early.
Eddie has died for today. He'll be back. He'll be alive tomorrow.
Jason is sniping.
Eddie is going to be resurrected on Monday. All right.
We'll see, AFC
West. AFC West.
Baseball game.
Yeah, exactly. The Ben Maller event. He's prepping for the Ben Maller event. AFC West, that ought to be contentious. I'm a Denver Broncos fan. I think Vance Joseph's another guy that's probably not going to make it past this season. I've got my guys in last, as a matter of fact. I'm torn between Chiefs and Chargers. I like Andy Reid. More than I like the situation in L.A., but I've continually believed the Chargers are going to win this division. I thought that for a while, and I'm going to stick with it. I think the Chargers will narrowly win the division over the Chiefs, but I can't wait to see Patrick Mahomes play.
Danny, I'll let you go first.
I love the Chargers' defense. I'm not going to front, and I like their coach. Yesterday, my Lyft driver, Waylon, he had Fox Sports Radio on in his ride when I hopped in his car. Very cool. He told me that he thinks my Raiders will be 9-7.
Waylon knows.
I'm taking that. So Raiders second, Chargers first in the AFC West this season.
All right.
Well, I mean, if Waylon tells you that Raiders are going to be 9-7, how could you not believe him? Under Andy Reid, the Chiefs have had over 10 wins 4 or 5 seasons. They won the division in back-to-back years. The year they did not win the division, I believe they were 9-7 still. I'm going with Chiefs, Chargers, Raiders. No, Chiefs, Chargers, Broncos, Raiders. Raiders are 5-11 this year.
Programming note,
like I said,
Jeff's brother plays for the Chiefs.
Yeah. Also, John Gruden's the most overrated person in all of sports. I said that earlier.
Incorrect.
I'll say it again. I've said it for months. It is not incorrect. Just look
Raiders
at his offensive
AFC West
stats
10-6.
And the fact that he was called a guru. All right. I'm glad that you got that in. We didn't even get any NFC West, but I'm taking the Rams, and no one cares what anyone else thinks. Thanks to Clay for letting us in. He'll be back on Monday.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.